This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Andrew Basevich, who graduated from West Point, went off and fought in Vietnam, spent 23 years as a career officer, finally retiring as a colonel, now teaching at Boston University. He has written a book called Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. And I've asked him to join me today to talk about it. Andrew, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks very much for having me on your program.
People always use the phrase, support the troops. Support the troops. The only time they really run into the troops is if they happen to see the troops coming home in their khakis going through the airport. But I always think that even though we've been at war for a dozen years now, Americans forget about our troops the rest of the time, especially when they come home and need medical care or a job. Is that the breach of trust you're talking about?
You put your finger on it exactly. I mean, we do indeed say we support the troops. We do indeed proclaim our affection and regard for the troops. But I think as a practical matter, we've hung the troops out to dry. We have become disengaged from our military. We've allowed Washington to take ownership of that military. Washington has abused it, misused it. Soldiers pay the consequences, and in that sense, the rhetoric of supporting the troops turns out to be pretty empty.
Do you think that that's because we don't have what General Stanley McChrystal calls skin in the game?
Yeah, I do. You know, I tell the story by going back to Vietnam, a misguided and catastrophic war that culminated in the abandonment by the American people of the tradition of the citizen soldier. In our history up to Vietnam, we had relied on citizen soldiers to bear the brunt of wars. After Vietnam, we embraced the concept of a professional military. In many respects, the professional military is a professional is an impressive organization. But there, I think, is the reason why we the people disengaged from war and disengaged from the military with unfortunate consequences. Washington basically has engaged in unnecessary wars, and in the wars that they've engaged in, they've done a very bad job of managing them.
Sounds like you're saying that if the draft were still around, we probably wouldn't be going off to war as quickly.
Well, the book doesn't argue for the draft. The book argues for a program of national service, meaning that all 18-year-olds would serve country and community in some capacity, with some of them serving in the military. And my argument is that that sort of program would have two positive effects. The first would be that it would close the gap between the military and society, and I think lead the American people to be more watchful with regard to how the government used its soldiers. But secondly, I argue that a program of national service could enrich the reigning conception of citizenship by making the point that being a citizen is not simply claiming prerogatives and privileges, but actually entails obligations.
You know, having served in Vietnam and knowing what it was like when you came home from Vietnam, and I know, having never served in the military, but having lived through that era, what the draft and that war did to us, caused a generational divide, and people think that we have conflict in this country now. They don't understand what it was like in the 60s and early 70s while we were sending young men off to a useless war in Southeast Asia. But I don't see any protests anywhere close to the Vietnam War protests in our modern day. Is that, again, because of that lack of skin in the game?
Well, that's the argument that I make in the book, and I think it's true. General McChrystal belatedly, in retirement, made this discovery. I wish he would have discovered the problem when he was still on active duty and might have been in a position to do something about it. But it just seems to me that if you consider the last decade plus now of war, where we haven't won, we're not winning. We didn't win in Iraq. We're not going to win in Afghanistan. The financial costs of the wars have been through the roof, although, of course, there too, we the people tend to ignore that because it's costs that simply take the form of debt being imposed on future generations. We've paid, the military itself and military families have paid in human terms, but there too, unless you have served, unless you have a family member who has served, the lives lost and shattered are relatively distant. And so we are content, you know, to go to ball games and clap and applaud. And I think it's wrong. I think it's immoral. I think it's not good for the country.
And speaking of ball games, you write in Breach of Trust about a July 4th game at Fenway Park, which you call, quote, a convenient mechanism for voiding obligation, a made-to-order opportunity for conscience easing, unquote.
Well, and I happen to cite Independence Day at Fenway Park in 2011, but it's become a commonplace in virtually all public events or in our political rhetoric. You know, the politicians never missing a chance to praise the troops, and the troops should be praised. I'm not trying to say they shouldn't be. But that's not sufficient. It's not good enough.
It's not enough to just say thanks for your service.
Right. Correct. What we ought to be doing is saying thanks for your service, and because I'm grateful for your service, I'm going to make sure that you are not put in harm's way unnecessarily. I'm going to make sure that if we do have to go to war, it's because there's no alternative. It's for the most important interests. And by God, we're going to win the war rather than have you undertake, you know, 4, 5, 6 combat tours in a war that lasts more than a decade and doesn't end in success.
How much of the hawkish push towards armed conflict do you think comes from those with ties to the military-industrial profiteers?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. You know, you use kind of an inflammatory phrase, but it's a good phrase. I'd use a little less inflammatory one, the national security state, that there is a very large apparatus. Government strap hangers, corporate entities that is committed to maintaining the status quo, meaning committed to maintaining a massive military budget, committed to maintaining an empire of overseas bases. This is the source of profit. It's the source of status. It's the source of power. And therefore, the people who are in that arena really have very little incentive to think critically about our military policies and what they have yielded.
Do you think that had an impact on the recent discussions about Syria?
I don't know. You know, that's very, very interesting. It's clear from public opinion polls, and I think congressional reluctance reflected the public opinion polls, that Americans are not giving President Obama the free hand to intervene in Syria the way they allowed him to intervene in Libya, or the way they went along with his escalation in Afghanistan, or the way they went along with George W. Bush's initiatives. But does that reluctance with regard to Syria indicate a turning point, or is it kind of a one-off event and, you know, 6 months from now we'll be bombing some other place? I don't know, but it's a very, very interesting thing for us to watch to see if this is an indicator of real change in the attitude of the American people toward military power.
I'll tell you, over the last decade plus, I have been thinking, well, the way Americans are reacting as each year goes by and we continue to be at war, I think to myself, okay, this is the last time we're going to do this, getting involved in another nation's war. Defending the homeland is one thing, but going out and getting involved in other people's civil wars and other people's problems, maybe it's the last time we're going to do that. What do you think?
Well, maybe. I mean, I think it would help if we could think about the various and sundry interventions we've undertaken in the Middle East over the past 30 years.
None of which has worked.
Bingo. I mean, that's exactly right. Whatever we thought we were doing when we sent Marines into Lebanon or when we bombed Gaddafi back in the 80s or when we underwrote the Mujahideen fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan all the way down to the present moment, whatever we thought we were doing, if we thought we were making the region stable or more democratic or making them love us, it hasn't worked. And therefore, I think that it's time to step back, survey U.S. military involvement in the greater Middle East over a period of decades and ask the simple question, is it working or not? Answer is, it's not, and therefore we ought to do something different.
I agree. I think our foreign policy in that regard has been a huge nightmare. I can't think of one great success we've had overseas in my lifetime. Colonel Andrew Bacevich, the book is called Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.